Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
Welcome back. The Advertising Show is being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. Ray and Brad here, and Jeremy Kent coming up shortly with a lot of great stuff from Europe. It's the European News Desk. He does the reports weekly here at The Advertising Show. And David Ocker is joining us out of San Francisco, the San Francisco area. David is the vice chairman of Profit. Profit.com is the website, and executive advisor to Dentsu Inc. and professor of marketing strategy at the Haas School of Business in Berkeley. So we're going to talk to David here in just a few moments. We've got a lot of great reasons, compelling reasons for you to stay with us here at The Advertising Show. Also have a really cool relationship with a company that provides a really cool service for you, and Brad's going to talk about that.
Yeah, if you want a free 14-day trial and free audiobook download, hold on and I'll tell you how you can get that, because today's show is brought to you by Audible.com, where you can find over 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player, and chances are you're listening to the show today through your iPod or MP3 player. So to get an audiobook download would be something that would probably fit well within your audio file. So I suppose audio.com, Ray, as you well know, has available many of the business titles of authors that we feature here on The Advertising Show, as well as current releases from the New York Times bestseller list, arts and entertainment, fiction, nonfiction. They're all out there, and they're all available at audible.com. So to get your free audiobook download and begin your free 14-day trial, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/adshow. Again, audiblepodcast.com/adshow, and sign up today, and you will be hooked in to a free audiobook download and begin your free 14-day trial. It's as simple as that. So
you're addicted, you're hooked. That's right. I like that.
That's right. It's kind of like a crack dealer. The first 14 days are free, and then after that, you pay.
I want to say thank you as well to Microsoft. Brad and I are connecting here via long distance, and obviously it sounds like we're in a couple of studios, which we are. However, those studios are about, what would you say, about 3,000 miles apart? 4,000?
4,000, yeah.
4,000 miles apart from each other via a thing called Skype. You've probably heard of them. Microsoft did. They've agreed to buy Skype for $8.5 billion in cash. Cash, called 20s, I imagine. The most aggressive movement yet by Microsoft to play in the increasingly converged worlds of communication, information, and entertainment. The deal with Microsoft, it says, will let Microsoft be more ambitious, do more things. That sounds like a slogan. Redmond, Washington company motivated to acquire Skype because communication technologies have been the backbone of Microsoft growth in recent years. So, there you go, Tony Bates, chief executive officer of Skype, now $8.5 billion richer. Wow, that's pretty good. And this is all because they came up with a way for people to talk over the internet and have pretty doggone good quality, not only talk, but, see each other across the pond, so to speak. 4,000 miles away, not a bad deal, huh, Brad? Well, how would you like to bid on that?
I can't remember. Maybe you show it there with your item, but it's some 20, 30, 50, I don't remember, say 50 billion, million, I should say, 50 mm-hmm. million. Subscribers that use Skype. I don't know. You may show that there yourself, but I think the key there is being able to Microsoft hook into those hundreds of millions of people that are currently on Skype and leverage those back to the parent company, Microsoft. Do you show the number?
I'm looking as you're talking here, and I don't see it just yet.
I want to say I heard 40, 50 million, something in that neighborhood.
I got it.
But
I
anyway, you know, Microsoft has been for a long while now threatening or competing with other companies to make a major acquisition. $8 billion, obviously they have plenty of cash. Usually those kind of acquisitions are a combination of cash and stock, but 100% cash, $8 billion, my goodness.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know what? It's a good service. It really is. And they've improved it. You know, this is not obviously a commercial for Skype, but they've improved the communications quality. It really does sound that good. I mean, you know, Brad, you are the one that's connected into the console here via Skype. And frankly, I'd defy anybody. You've got a good quality microphone, but I defy anybody to say, you know, hey, you're not there. What do you mean you're not there?
So, unless you listened to a show 5 years ago.
Well, it's true. But seriously, there's really...
gotten a lot better.
Yeah, there's not that much difference. So, way to go. And somebody just got a lot richer. A lot richher. We've got... possibly like our guest. I don't know. Maybe he had stock in Skype as well, but who knows. David Ocker is vice chairman of Profit, as we said, executive advisor to Dentsu, one of the world's leading gurus on branding and the winner of 3 awards for lifetime contributions to the science of marketing. He's published over 100 articles, 14 books, including Strategic Marketing Management, that's out by Wiley, which have been translated into 18 languages, including... Pigeon, I believe, named as one of the top 5 most important marketing business gurus in 07. Ocker has won awards for the best article in the California Management Review, twice, that is, in the Journal of Marketing. He has a regular column all the way at the AMA Marketing News called Ocker on Branding. He lives in Berkeley, California. So all in all, it's going to be a fun conversation to talk to David today here with Ray and Brad. Brad, you got something quick we can chat about?
Well, real quickly, I know you're a big fan of Lester Holt. I am as well. You see him occasionally on the Today Show. He is a major anchor for NBC. The hiring by WMAQ in Chicago of Stephen Holt, whose father is NBC News weekend anchor Lester Holt, has brought charges of nepotism. The younger Holt, just 2 years out of Pepperdine University, has been named reporter and weekend morning co-anchor at the NBC station. We call that here on the advertising show getting a media gig because you're an upstanding member of the Lucky Sperm Club.
That too, and that's happened before.
Sure,
you've got people. Oh, I don't see that. They're saying that's an issue? Is that what you're saying?
Well, two years out of Pepperdine and to be anchoring a major market like Chicago, the weekend news, I think something's co-anchoring. I think something's going on. That's an NBC-owned and operated station in Chicago, top, you know, third market in the nation. How do you, 2 years out of Pepperdine, get a gig like that unless your name is Lester Holt?
Well, maybe there is something about the gene pool, but frankly, I think there are some people out there who have it, and many of those anchors who will never get it, and God help them if the teleprompter goes south.
And it's not fair to say that without having seen the guy on air.
Yeah.
If we were to see him and he was terrible, and then we could say, well, maybe there is something, but we haven't seen it, so we don't know.
I doubt if Chicago, somebody hiring there would have the infatuation of saying, ooh, it's Lester's, gene pool kind of a thing. But I think
I got a Lester on line, too. Bring his son, Stephen, in. We need to chat.
Something like that. Are you the father? Kind of a thing. How about Jeremy Kent? We know what he says is true and quite cool, too, as well. It's Jeremy Kent, our European news correspondent here in the Advertising Show. Let's listen.
Hello and a very warm welcome to London Soho for the European News Desk. This week, Peugeot turns to crowdsourcing, the European Union upholds net neutrality, and Sainsbury's claims to feed a family for just $80 a week. French car manufacturer Peugeot is the latest brand to opt for crowdsourcing as it seeks to give its motion and emotion strapline greater meaning. The company is offering a $10,000 prize for new creative treatments. The brief has gone out to EYIKA, a crowdsourcing company that claims a membership of 155,000 creatives, and the public can enter via Peugeot UK's Facebook page. A number of brands have turned to crowdsourcing over the last couple of years, and it can throw up some interesting ideas. However, it suggests a failure at the strategic planning level, a disconnect with the agency's creative team, or a client looking for a quick-fix creative solution on a shoestring budget. There is an argument for public engagement, but when Andrew Goodall, internet manager for Peugeot UK, said, "In the UK, the year-old motion and emotion brand positioning needs to resonate and mean more to consumers," some fundamental questions really need to be asked. The European Union has decided against legislation to uphold net neutrality and prevent a two-speed internet. However, it vowed to remain vigilant and true to open and neutral principles. The new rules will come into place on May 25th. BT is the largest internet provider in the UK and has long argued for the option to discriminate between different types of data and to charge more for data-heavy traffic from video sites such as YouTube. BT sees a future with greater demands on their network due to video traffic, and a spokesman said, "We believe that decisions about how the internet value chain works in the future should largely be left to the market rather than regulators, and we are pleased that the European Commission appears to agree with us on this point." BT have made it clear that they won't charge content providers for basic internet delivery. Sainsbury's, one of the UK's largest supermarket chains, has put $16 million behind a new campaign that promises to feed a family of four for just $80 a week. The TV and print campaign by Abbott Mead Vickers BBDO is supported by digital activity created by Dare. It provides details on how to prepare three meals per day, 7 days a week, including a Sunday roast, with an average serving price of just under $1. Sainsbury's set out to dispel its expensive image back in 2008 with its Feed the Family for a Fiver campaign. The long-term results are encouraging, with Sainsbury's claiming a 60% boost for its basics range. This is Jeremy Kent at the European News Desk for The Advertising Show.
Jeremy Kent, thank you. As always, here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth at The Advertising Show, theadvertisingshow.com. Great place to spend a few minutes or a few hours listening to all of the great guests that we've had, now going on year number 10. What a milestone. We have out of California this weekend, David Ocker. As we said, he's vice chairman of Profit. David, a sincere pleasure. Thank you for taking time out of your week to join us here at The Advertising Show.
My pleasure.
Yeah, you know, before we jump into your book, which was an interesting read, and we'll talk majority of our time about your book, I wanted to get your take on Steve Jobs' health issues. They've certainly been in the news again recently. The media seems to enjoy speculating on the impact of Steve Jobs' absence, should that happen with Apple on a permanent basis. I'm curious, David, can Apple actually survive or even thrive without a Steve Jobs permanently there?
In my opinion, Steve Jobs is one of the top two or three greatest CEOs of our generation. And it's... and you just don't replace a guy like that. It's going to be really devastating for them. I think they can operationally keep the momentum going in what they have, which is a good thing. But as far as in my terminology, the way to disturb market is to create new categories or subcategories. He's done it six times in 10 years, and there's nobody on earth that has that kind of record. And he's not going to be replaceable.
So that's not a financial stock tip. That's just your opinion. I just want to disclaim that if I could. You know, in your book, you attribute the market successes and failures of recent years to brand relevance. Perhaps we should begin the interview today, David, with giving us a definition of brand relevance, if you would.
Well, you need to contrast what I call brand preference competition with brand relevance competition. Brand preference competition is where you have an established category and you're trying to make people believe that my brand is better than your brand. So you engage in incremental communication, you engage in very aggressive advertising and so on to do that, and you win if your brand is preferred, and what the astonishing fact is that just doesn't work very much. It doesn't change anything. The alternative is what I call brand relevance competition, where you try to create new categories or subcategories so that you win when competitors are simply not relevant. They're not considered because they don't have whatever is in that new subcategory. And that's the people that can pull that off have enormous wins. And as I said, Apple's done it six times. I was just reading in today's paper about Duncan Hines that they're taking their cake mix in a different direction. They're taking their decadently chocolate cake mix and putting out recipes that will be for people that really like to cook, not for necessarily mothers for their kids, which is a traditional market, but wow, for singles and for men and for just people that love to bake. And that's an example of creating a new subcategory.
You know, I hear you, and I understand what you're saying there, and I guess creating a new subcategory certainly is a way of limiting your competition because you're creating a category, I'm assuming, that is a new category that there are not existing players in. Is that correct? Am I
That's correct.
Yeah. So you're saying, and I can envision a lot of brand managers that listen to our show asking, scratching their head right now. You're saying it's a mistake for brand managers to focus their attention on getting customers to choose their product over their competitors. Is that correct?
No. What I'm saying is that we spend too much resources on brand preference competition and too little on brand relevance competition. And at the margin, I think firms ought to shift resources toward more substantial innovation and transformational innovation and shift resources away from incremental. But this is at the margin. You certainly have to still engage in brand preference competition as well.
I see. So back to creating a new product in a category all by itself, which certainly sounds like a winning strategy, but yet a major challenge, I would think, to accomplish. Can you give us some insights, David, as to how one might go about this?
Well, it starts with the getting an idea, and the key part is to evaluate that idea. It's easy to be too optimistic, and it's easy to be too pessimistic, and you don't want to do either one. You really want to find an idea that will have a substantial audience that the company can deliver on, and one that you can build barriers for competition so that it'll have legs over time. And so it is not easy. If it was easy, then it would be more prevalent. But if you look at any category and you look at major changes in the position of players, it always has been the result of people forming new categories or subcategories, almost never because they were successful at my brand is better than your brand competition. Brands
yeah,
are too stable.
You know, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Excuse me.
Yeah. Well, the market position of a company are just too stable. I did a study of the Japanese beer market for over 50 years, and over 50 years, the market share trajectory has only changed four times. Three times there were new subcategories formed, and the fourth subcategories were repositioned. And during that time, untold hundreds of millions were spent on new products and advertising and so on, and they had no impact at all.
Well, just as we wrap up this segment, one final question. When you talk about verifying market potential on a new category, a new product, et cetera, I mean, we're talking about consumer research, market research. Is there any non-traditional innovative ways that your company goes about verifying these potentials?
Well, that's a really good question. But Steve Jobs is famous for not ever conducting any customer research, at least in the sense that you and I know it. He just uses his intimate knowledge of the market and the technology and his instincts. And Henry Ford famously said if they asked customers, they'd say they want a faster horse. So the trouble with these substantial and transformational innovation, it's harder to get good customer feedback about it. But having said that, you certainly try to test the waters, and you try to do market tests and then refine ideas. So, but it's not as straightforward as you might think.
Or as it once must have been as well,
yes.
Obviously. Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth here on the Advertising Show out of the San Francisco area. David Ocker, who is Vice Chairman of Profit.com, also Brand Relevance. And we're going to talk about that and a little bit more here as we continue with the Advertising Show. Being powered by Schipul.com, it's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. The platforms are incredible marketing platforms for business. Check it out at Schipul.com. We thank Ed and his team for powering the Advertising Show for all these years as well. Ray and Brad on the Advertising Show. We'll continue here in just a moment.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
Hot dogs, Armor hot dogs. What kind? kinds of kids eat Armor hot dogs.
Rain, right back with you on the advertising show with our special guest out of the San Francisco area, David Ocker, Vice Chairman of Profit. David, I have a question for you. Can you give us an example of possibly a company that is doing a great job, an exceptional job as it relates to brand relevance? And possibly on the flip side, can you give us an idea of one you feel that could be doing a lot better job?
Well, I've studied hundreds of examples of companies that have been able to pull this off, and in any category you can find a host of them. You know, take automobiles. You had the Chrysler minivan in 1982 that went 16 years with no competition, none at all. And you have Enterprise rent a car that went 35 years with no competition. You have ESPN and CNN that went 10 years with no competition. You know, Dell Computer had a new way to deliver computers. Salesforce.com introduced cloud computing. You have IKEA, you have Zara in Whole Foods, in the retailing sector. And all these firms found a way to create some kind of a must-have that defined the new subcategory, and then found ways to own it over time.
Mm-hmm. But aren't we talking about first-mover advantage, as they call it, first-to-market?
Yeah, and I didn't answer the second half of your question, which was, you know, who has not done it well. An example of somebody that has not done it well is Microsoft. You mentioned them at the outset. And one of the reasons they have not done it well is it's the curse of success. They have these two huge, huge brands, Windows and Office, and they just soak up all the energy. And even though they've had this enormous R&D budget over the years, they've really almost come out with nothing. Mm-hmm. Sony has been equally disappointed in the last 15 or 20 years. And they have a lot of silo issues that prevent them from sort of getting their act together. And they also don't have a good sense of the market like Steve Jobs does. So McDonald's struggled with innovation for a long time, but the last 6 or 7 years they have turned the corner and been able to get some leadership in there that could do it, some marketing leadership and some technical leadership.
Very good. David, thank you very much. And Brad, you had a question as well, obviously.
Yeah, I was just going to, you know, I want to go back to something you said last segment, David. You mentioned how Steve Jobs is an individual that's known not to do research and trust his instincts. We've been fortunate, Ray and I, in being able to talk to a lot of very important people with big companies, not unlike yourself, David. And we learned from talking to an executive with Nike that Phil Knight is an example of an individual that knows his consumer and his brand because he, along with this particular brand manager that we spoke to several years ago, mentioned how in a lot of cases the ad campaigns for Nike back in the day when they were very innovative and very out there by themselves were never tested, and had they been tested, many would have never gotten off the ground. So I think there's something to be said for the value of market research, but more so the value of understanding who your brand is and who your customer is. I want to talk a little bit about what you say frequently in your book and have mentioned several times today, and that is how innovation is critical to attaining brand relevance. When we think about boosting creativity within an organization, I immediately think of Google and how they encourage their rank and file to allocate a certain number of hours per week to think about innovation within Google. But yet for most companies, I think it would be a daunting task to get their rank and file to come up with great ideas. How do you recommend to your client companies within your organization, David, on how to make their company more innovative?
Well, I think that companies have to be three things, which is organizationally, which are tough to put under the same tent. One, they have to be committed to a concept. They have to be able to really do incremental innovation, get better and better, and so forth. But at the same time, they have to be entrepreneurial. They have to be able to have an externally oriented information system, and they have to be able to allow new ideas to emerge and then to run with them. And the third thing is they have to have a centralized resource allocation scheme, because that's really the organizational killer that I see a lot. A company like Microsoft, the Windows and Office soaks up all the resources and soaks up the energy. So if you have a central resource allocation thing that says, okay, we're going to take a certain amount of our resources and we're going to invest in these new emerging areas, and you know, Windows and Office even can't touch that. But it's not easy. I mean, one company, I think it was GE, set up an office in Singapore someplace or Shanghai in order to protect that money from the big divisions. So it's tough, but it can be done and it is being done.
Well, one final question this segment. You know, lots has been said and written about social media. We've discussed it over the years here on the Advertising Show, and how brands are to use social influence and feed that back to the leveraging of their brand. Talk a little bit, if you would, David, about how companies are using social media today to strengthen or even elevate their brands with consumers.
Yeah, I've started to blog davidacker.com about 5 months ago, and it's really a fascinating world that's very complicated and fast changing, so it's tough. But my view on social media is that it's a mistake to use it as a communication vehicle. Rather, you should use this as an integrating device, as something to augment your offering. So when Pampers becomes a baby care company instead of a diaper company, their website becomes a key role in that, and the other media actually are subservient. They drive people to the website. Same, a lot of that, it's partially true with Harley Davidson as well, and Dell, for example. Now Dell's got a really good presence in the internet, and it's basically used to sort of to integrate everything else they're doing, and also to provide a basis of relationship. And I think that's the payoff, and not to view it as a communication device.
Today's show all about brand relevance, and our special guest out of San Francisco is David Acker, who is Vice Chairman of Profit. Profit.com is the website. We'll continue our conversation with Ray and Brad here in just a moment. Stay with us. The Advertising Show, Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth. So happy that you are here with us today, listening in. Our special guest out of the San Francisco area has a regular column in the AMA Marketing News, Acker on Branding, it's called, and many other publications as well, including Brand Relevance. David Acker, welcome back to the show. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Yeah, and what a wonderful book. I recommend to all of our listeners to check this out. It's a wonderful read from our friends at Wiley Publishing. You got some heavyweight praise on the back of the book from Chief Marketing Officer from Coca-Cola, P&G, Adobe. I don't know how much money you're sending them or if Wiley's doing it, but what the hell? You got some great
doesn't
great
matter,
people back
does it?
There. No, it really doesn't, as long as you can get them to agree to it, assuming they know about that. No, anyway, you know, you say just because an idea is new doesn't necessarily guarantee market success. I'm curious, other than the huge waste of R&D dollars as well as marketing funds, what are some of the risks in misjudging the potential of a new product idea or concept?
Well, one of them is timing. You know, Steve Jobs is given a lot of credit for having a vision, but you know, the iPod was introduced 2 years before Jobs by Sony, and the iPad was introduced 10 years earlier by Gates, who he called it the tablet PC, and the iPhone was in Europe 10 years before the iPhone came out. So there was others that had the vision, but Steve Jobs had the timing, and he also had the ability to get it right. To kind of get the last two or three dimensions to fall into place, so a lot of it is timing, and a lot of it is, I think, the most common reason why people miss is because they underestimate their ability to overcome technical and marketing hurdles. And something that, you know, appears formidable can be overcome. You know, the Toyota gave the Prius design team 3 years to come out with a Prius, and there was enormous technical obstacles, but they overcome them, and they delivered in 3 years. You know, P&G gave up on Tide 5 years before it emerged from some closet back in the catacombs, and because they thought, well, synthetic detergent is just not going to be able to be invented. So, you know, Mint.com, people said, well, nobody will ever give you financial information. Well, it turned out to be not true. So, if somebody is really committed to an idea, they can overcome these kind of hurdles. And so, to some extent, you've got to have somebody that has faith, and you've got to have the CEO on board.
You know, you mentioned timing, and certainly it's easy with hindsight to see companies such as Apple, as you give those examples of iPad and the iPhone and the iPod. And we're very familiar with the fact that there were others that preceded that particular company with those products and unsuccessful. Yet we've had many design experts, product design, world-class product design guests here on the show. And they emphasize how important design is. And I know you mentioned that it's also the product in addition to market timing. But some have argued that Apple's success was not so much timing, but it was product design, because they're really out there and certainly leading the way when it comes to product design. How much does product design, or can product design, overcompensate for what might be a bit early on market timing?
Well, my research suggests that most really great products, there's about 7 or 8 dimensions, and you need all of them. If you're missing even 1 or 2, it's not going to work. And I learned that in studying the Saturn success of the 90s, that just everything has to come together. And if you're just missing anything, like the Segway, Segway had so many things going for it. It was a great design. They were able to manufacture it with airlessly, and they had probably more publicity than any other new product ever. And yet it failed because they were missing distribution. And so you just have to have everything. And so it's not a matter of saying that it's hard to say at the end of the day how much percentage is due to any of those factors, because if you omit any of them, you're probably going to fail. So you got to have them all. And for some categories, certainly for jobs, design is one of those dimensions that was crucial to his success.
Well, that's a great place to end it today. I'd like to thank you for being on the show, and Ray.
Absolutely, David. Great book. We recommend you go get that book, Brand Relevance. You can also find out more, I would assume, David, if you look at profit.com. Is that correct?
Yes, or my blog, davidacker.com.
Very good. Invite you to participate in that as well. Interesting stuff, David. Keep it up. The marketing and advertising community needs folks like you.
Thank you so much. Well, I really think this brand relevance concept works. It explains so much of market dynamics.
And a very special thanks to our guest today, David Acker, on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. Happy to have you listening. Remember, theadvertisingshow.com is chock full of great interviews and unique perspectives from this industry's top people. Check it out if you haven't already. Theadvertisingshow.com, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. You can visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production, and we will talk to you soon.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.